right, welcome into Shock and Ship. And we got some unfinished business today, Shock.
Oh, God. That's what I'm talking about, Wes. That's what it started to show off, right, with some hashtags. Let's get it right. Mike loves it. Look at it.
Hashtag run it back.
Running it back.
Is the run it back, is that the Chiefs thing? Or is that somebody else's before the Chiefs?
Nah, I've seen it all with the Chiefs. I don't know.
I want to say it was like a basketball one. Was it like it wasn't the Lakers, right? It was it the Golden State?
Ooh. You know what? It's one of those phrases where it's like trust the process, where everyone just kind of says it now.
For it.
It just sounds cool, right? Hey, bro, run it back.
All I know, you know what it makes me think of is when you're running like team run and you keep screwing it up and they come run it again. Run it back.
You're bringing back bad memories. I remember them days.
Yeah, that's triggering me.
We are going to run this play until we get it right.
Oh, man.
Maybe the play.
Don't have the same
attitude. Hey, coach, maybe the play's wrong. Maybe we're right. The play's wrong, man.
I got Bobo like right here, right now. I hear that right now. It's loud and clear. You'd be like, damn it, Shock, run it again. That's on you. Ah, Muhammad, you didn't get to the depth. Ah, Thomas, you didn't run to the right leg. Every play was somebody. Big Maxwell.
Who's the best player that messed up the most?
Oh. This is an easy one. Fred Gibson.
No.
Fred was my roommate. Fred was my roommate. But no lie, we had plays so that Fred will remember him, and they were named out the way he was from, which was Waycross, so that he knew, oh, we said Waycross, ding, ding, this play's for you, brother. So Fred be in practice, we'll call a play. He run out of the huddle. Shot, what I got? As he run out of the huddle. It used to be bad, man. It used to be bad. So we had to start naming. Our entire offense was really named after, like, even though Coach Rick had his system, all our, like, checks and go-to stuff was all stuff that so that dudes could remember. And it was all nicknames of guys. Sometimes it was what was happening at the time. So we had a dude on our team. I can't even remember his last name, but he played running back. He was number 24, and it was a run, and we would call it Rainbow. And we call it Rainbow simply because everybody thought that my man, you know, sometimes he was a little off, sometimes he wasn't. We said Rainbow, which means, hey, over the top sometimes, because he was over the top. And that was the signal, like this, over the top, Rainbow. So we had a bunch of little stuff like that, which was pretty funny.
How many times did you, and I know this happens, so that's, and it's exactly why I'm asking it, because it happened to me. How many times would you call a play in the huddle and you would say, okay, here's the cadence, it's on two, and get up to the line and forget what the play was on?
Oh, every time. No. I would say every time, but
it happens a lot. I think people that don't play football don't realize it happens a lot.
Russ Tanner, Wes Schweitzer was my two centers. And as a quarterback, you got to make sure you got the right personnel in. You got to make sure you only got 10 other guys in the huddle with you. And then you got to make sure that you say the play the right way and it's the right formation that's going to the right side. And then at the end, you give them the snap count. You walk to the line of scrimmage, you say, okay, they playing cover two, or this guy's playing a nine, and we're going to run this. And then you get there, and you get to the snap, and you say, oh, did I say it was a one or two? So then that's when I tap my centers, what we on again? And then he'll turn around. He'll be like, shot, we on one. Come on. So
I can remember breaking the huddle, walking up to the line of scrimmage, and immediately turning around and asking the quarterback what the snap count was, Ian, because I'd already forgotten it.
Oh, man. It was crazy. We used to have – so another one of our plays was called Grant. It was 19 for Charles Grant, who played, you know, for Georgia. And it was nothing but an outside sweep. We had a play called Vacation, and we would snap it. And if I signal it, this is the signal, because it looks like a V. So we used to have – it looks – football looks like it's really hard. It ain't. We had got the most basic stuff going on out there. It was ridiculous.
When I worked at Tulsa, I got to, you know, Malzahn has a reputation as a great play caller, great offensive mind. He would, you know, he would have this way, a razor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then he would have he had a play called Fight Song, which was he said, we're gonna call this Fight Song because every time we run it, their band's gonna be playing the Fight Song. And it was basically an unbalanced line where the tight end looked like a tackle and he'd just go right down the seam and he was uncovered and people just drop it to him. You know, all those, I'm trying to remember, I had one called Woody, which was the one where it's like the fumble rooski where the guy hides behind the line and runs along the line. Mm. But Pink Patriot.
Pink Patriot.
That was one. Oh. Pink Patriot.
Now, when I got to the league, I got a little bit more sophisticated now. We used to have, so instead of saying one or two, so we got to the league, how smart the dudes were. Dudes will kind of get used to your snap count.
You would say it in like, instead of one or two, you'd say it in like a different language or something?
Say a different language. But dudes would get, they used to get mad at the quarterbacks because be like, you need to change up the snap count. Don't always go on one. Don't always go on two. We're like, man, we got all this other stuff to think about. When you think about, did we go on one last time or did we go on two this time? So the play call would be, if we called an even number to the right, it would be on two. If you call odd numbers, it would be on one. So
you got to think about it a little bit more.
Yeah, you had to think about it a little bit more. And then it got even more sophisticated where if we got to the line and we wanted to change a play, run it to the right or left, we would go to West Coast teams would be to the right. East Coast teams would be to the left. Like, if you didn't know your geography, you wasn't going to be able to play.
Yeah. You're going to have to take a map up there.
Dude, it was crazy.
Up to the line.
It was so many different ways to call a play or call a snap count throughout my years playing. It was unbelievable. And then the things you had to do so dudes could remember was unbelievable as well, too.
They talk about the guys that have the really great inflection, the guys that can draw a guy off all the time. I think they talk Aaron Rodgers. They say Aaron Rodgers is one of those guys that can draw you off all the time just by the way he changes his cadence around.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah,
he does a lot of stuff, man. He's like a mastermind of that, and I feel like he's actually playing mind games. Like he enjoys not just because it helps the team. He enjoys just messing with your head.
Well, because he gonna get a free play out of it, and he can throw it wherever he wants, and which and is great too.
You can go deep.
Yeah, you get to win on it. I remember when I was like the scout team quarterback in the NFL, going against our number one defense. What I would do, I would change the colors. So you always hear red 80, red 80, or you hear green for it. I come up to the line, fuchsia 37.
Wow.
And the D line will be just up there dying laughing. So by the end of the year, they would come to the line and be like,
one of your O linemen thought that was a city in California. That was going
just
left.
They just laugh at what color can you come up with that we haven't heard of? So by the end of the year, it was tough pulling a color job, but it was always funny. Everybody, it'd be funny. Everybody being at the line of scrimmage just laughing. And because you're like, what the hell are y'all laughing at? Coach, I got no idea. But if somebody messed up now, that was going to be another thing.
Did you hear DJ just laugh? DJ just lapsed into like quarterback voice. Did you hear that?
I heard
red 80. Red. Immediately, it's like you smoke 12 packs of cigarettes. The one that always gets me is Cam Newton. You hear Cam Newton talk, he's got this nice, soft, kind of mellifluous, like DJ voice. Yeah. And then he gets under center. It's like,
I remember like, when I first got to the Falcons, like, they literally made me get up in front of the whole entire team, and you have to say the play, come out the huddle, and then have the snap count to go with it. So imagine I'm a rookie, and I'm sitting in there with Michael Vick, D'Angelo Hall, Keith Brooking, all these, like, veteran dudes, and I got to give the snap count, and they got to be right, and the coach is just blistering you with it. So I got used to giving my own snap count here and there.
I think Matt Ryan's quarterback voice is actually his real voice because that dude
is not his real
Philly,
voice.
Yeah. I mean, you hear him in press conferences, he's like just a nice, mild mannered guy. But then every once in a while, that hot mic picks him up, and you know that's kind of how he really talks.
I'd like to hear him go full Philly guy. You know, like water ice.
Yeah, water.
Tacony Palmyra.
He can have a mean streak now. He can be angry at you now. You know it. I mean,
oh yeah.
We've all seen the get the F off our field clip and all that. So he's definitely he ain't the one that's gonna shy away from dropping a couple of F bombs on you.
Well, Shock, I know you know, obviously this is a dogs podcast, but Big week for the Falcons, introducing a new head coach, new GM. You've been covering that all day as we record this on Tuesday. What are some of your quick takeaways for the Falcons fans listening to the show?
I'll be honest, man. I had the chance to watch both these guys in their press conference. And for me growing up, first impressions were everything. I was taught your first impression means everything. And these two guys completely impressed me with the way they handled, first time in a long time, the Atlanta media. So Arthur Smith coming from Tennessee, not really, you know, having to deal with the media as a coordinator. And then now Terry Fontenot coming over from the Saints, who, by the way, he's been there. He was there 18 years. So to come over to a division rival was a little bit different. But both these guys, very impressive, man. I got a chance to do some breakdowns on the Falcons website about what Arthur Smith does really well. And everybody looks at Derrick Henry as the guy, and he is. He's a superstar, no doubt. He's, you know, big physical back. But there were times I'm watching film in 5, 6, 7 games, and he's not getting touched till he gets to the second and third level. The dude uses motion, formation, scheme. He uses personnel as good as anybody that I've seen in a long time. This was my first time really to study that Tennessee Titans offense, and I was blown away with how good they were. This was the number one team in the red zone last year in touchdown percentage. And the one reason and the one thing the Falcons struggled at, in the red zone. The reason why Younghoe Koo was going to the Pro Bowl because they kicked so many freaking field goals. So I was impressed with both of them, man. Both of them spoke really well for the first time in Atlanta media. They answered some hard, tough questions. And obviously the biggest questions of them all about what are they going to do with their number four pick? What are you going to do with Julio Jones? What are you going to do with Matt Ryan? So we'll see what happens. But today was the first time I was really got a chance to hear those guys talk and was really impressed.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing and the thing I miss the least about going covering those press conferences every single day is the expectation to ask that question on day one to those guys when you know full well they're not going to answer it.
No doubt. And that's exactly what Terry Fontenot said. Hey, I understand you guys got a job. I understand you guys got to ask the question, but I will not be answering any questions that are detailed in the manner of talking about players specifically. So before you even ask me, I'm not going to answer. So
meanwhile, I think the Eagles are going to hire a broken down 76 Chevy Impala.
Look at there. What a train wreck you got going on over there, huh?
It's not good.
Mike, what I hear is one guy wanted Carson Wentz, one guy wanted Jalen Hurts, huh? That's really what it came down to, huh?
I think here's what it is. I don't know if he would necessarily wanted Jalen Hurts, but I think he didn't want Carson Wentz. And I read a story in the Philadelphia Inquirer this week where the first thing you see when you walk into Howie Roseman's office is a Carson Wentz fat head stuck to the wall.
Oh, really? Fat head on the wall?
So I think you know who's going to be QB1.
Dang. Oh, no doubt.
And I think Doug Peterson was just like, nah, I'm done. You guys have fun.
So you think if Peterson was still there, would Wentz still be there? That's the question.
I think he'd probably – I don't know if he'd run him off, but I think he'd give Hurts every chance. I mean, if you can go and look at statistically, Wentz has not been the same quarterback for the last 2 years. Mm-mm. His accuracy's off. I mean,
why they get him $100 million?
I don't know.
Why they get him $100 million if you ain't really sure?
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, Nick Foles has been the guy that saved you all these years.
You know what? Here's what it is. I think I don't read Bill Simmons anymore because he's like Hollywood fancy boy now. But when he was really writing good stuff,
he said Bill Simmons is doing impressions of Bill Simmons every time he writes an article.
Yeah. I feel like we should be part of the Ringer podcast network, but that's another story. But he said something like when you win a Super Bowl, you get a 5-year clock where you're not allowed to complain about your team anymore. Now, for
what's it been, 2 years?
No, I think it's been three or four.
I'm
trying to remember.
Three.
So I'm not gonna complain. I'm still happy. We finally got to the Super Bowl. But it's a tire fire right now.
Tire fire.
It's not great.
Dang. So who would you want to be your next head coach? I mean,
I wanted
out of the likely candidates.
I wanted the guy from the Niners, Saleh.
Oh, Robert Saleh.
I wanted him a lot. I wanted him because I thought guys played hard for him.
Yeah, he was.
There were some crappy teams, and that defense never quit.
Yeah, they had a bunch of guys out. Yeah, they played.
Yeah, hard. Yeah. So I liked him a lot. Other than that, man, I don't know.
So who has the bigger dumpster fire right now? The Philadelphia Eagles or the Houston Texans?
The Texans.
See, that one to me is crazier because a year ago,
did you read the Sports Illustrated article about the Texans?
No.
Read it. It is unbelievable.
About what's going on.
There's a guy on their staff who was like, he was like a character coach that they got from
Patriots.
Yeah. And it talks about, you know, and it's very well reported. And
what kind of coach?
Character coach. Like I've never
heard of this kind of thing, man.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
it's bizarre.
Well, I think it's like a little bit mixture sports psychologist, cheerleader, that kind of stuff.
Okay. But they're paying him like
he's the GM.
They pay him six figures like a coach.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Read that. Go find that story. I think it was, I can't remember the lady's name, Jenny something for the rights for that Monday Morning Quarterback on Sports Illustrated. That story is amazing because it just gives you such insight into what has become a really, from the outside looking in, a really dysfunctional organization.
Well, what's puzzling to me is if you go and you have a franchise guy, we know in Deshaun Watson, you pay him the money. And obviously you had a dumpster fire with Bill O'Brien trading away his best receiver. And then now you got a chance to make it right. And you tell your franchise quarterback, you're going to be a part of the process. And then you have a search firm that tells you this guy is better for you. And you go totally away from that. And you don't.
And then you intentionally don't interview the guy your quarterback wants you to interview, and then later on you throw him an interview we wanted to interview him all the time.
Right. Here you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
You had a chance to interview this guy for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And you don't give this guy a chance.
Yeah.
It's
an amazing story. Well, yeah, and I think he'd look really good in Eagles green.
Can the Eagles afford it? Because I know the Falcons can't, and a lot of Falcons fans.
Straight up, $100 million.
Just swap it out.
Run it back.
Got unfinished business in Philly.
Just swap the contracts. Yeah. Man, that's crazy, man.
Deshaun had a Falcons jacket on in his Instagram story a few nights ago, and I saw a lot of Falcons fans just
everybody lose their minds,
stumbling over themselves, getting excited about that. And it's just
that must be fun to have that kind of a social media following. And Deshaun's a smart guy. He knows exactly
what he's doing.
He's just twisting it a little. That must be fun to be able to have people hanging on you like that.
Just like he was hanging out in New York the other day. Everybody's like, oh, he's in New York, we might as well just get in.
Crazy. He's having a good time.
I just like pizza.
Yeah. Shock, how about these dogs in the NFL, man? I hated seeing Chubb in that loss, but he gave him everything he could, and that's what you expect from Chubb. But then Mecole, he is like – he's the kind of guy that could end up being, if they go back, could be like an MVP in a Super Bowl. Like, you know how – Super Bowl MVPs sometimes are just that guy you least expect. And it's not that you don't expect Mecole to make big plays, but it's like the Chiefs are drawing up these packages and plays for him.
They have so many options on offense.
That's what's down to everybody. Yeah. They can do whatever they want with it. And you know what's crazy is I remember when Mecole decided to leave and everybody's like, what do you do and where are you going? And he goes to the Chiefs.
That one made sense.
And it's like the best decision ever for him. And he's taking off. What happened last week? They were, moving a little bit, but then they give him the little jet sweep motion and he's around.
My God, I don't think I've ever seen anybody look as fast as he did. He was flying.
Dude is ridiculously fast. So that's a good call, Wes.
And then Garrett, how about Myles Garrett chasing him down too?
And that's when he got hurt. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, he played hurt the rest of the game because of that.
Yep.
After that. So me, you know what's funny? You bring that up. I was watching that wild card weekend, and I watched it, you know, last weekend. And I'm like, every year there is a Georgia player on a team that ends up going to the Super Bowl, or they got one on every freaking team. I mean, I was thinking about, I was like, okay, in the AFC, you're talking about Buffalo, you're talking about Kansas City. Obviously, you got dogs. We talked about with Mecole. But in Buffalo, how about Fromm coming to him his first year? He's in an
Isaiah McKenzie
game. Isaiah McKenzie, yeah. He had a big catch up.
Is Cordy Glenn still there?
I don't know.
Cordy Glenn was with them for a while, too.
Yeah, I know he wasn't starting, though. But,
yeah.
But it's crazy. You look around the league and you look at all these different teams and dogs everywhere.
Yeah.
Dogs everywhere.
Yeah, I was at Mecole's draft night with his family that second round night. And that's always, you know, kind of the risk of showing up to one of those things. And you're just like, I hope he actually gets picked tonight because
it's real awkward.
Yeah, it is. I was going to feel pretty bad. But then, you know, you got that phone call, Andy Reid, and it's worked out to say the least. But who could have known that night he's going to have a Super Bowl ring and potentially back-to-back Super Bowl rings.
Well, I think what worked out was, if you remember, it was the time when Tyreek Hill had got into a little trouble.
That's exactly what it was.
They weren't sure if he was
going to come back. As someone who went to Oklahoma State, that actually happens a lot with Tyreek Hill.
And I don't think they thought he was going to come back. So it's like, let's get a dude that's similar to him. And now, it's, like you said, Mike, embarrassment of riches in Kansas City. We'll see if Mahomes can play, though, man. You know.
Oh, dude, he didn't look good.
Oh, he was.
He didn't look good.
Them legs.
No, he didn't.
Wobbly. Jello.
Well, it's not just the neck and head thing. It's the foot, too.
The foot. He's got, like, turf toe.
Oh, yeah.
Damn. Yeah.
That's all bad. But guess what? If he can play, he's going to play.
Yeah.
Me that. They my wife that suck up.
My wife said to me, and my wife, you know, she sits there and watches the football with me, and she knows a lot about sports. She's pretty, you know, living with me for 30 years to kind of figure it out. But she was like, oh, great. One more week of every single commercial with Pat Mahomes on it.
Oh, yeah.
I swear to God, he's in every commercial.
He head is. And shoulders, State Farm. I mean, he's everywhere, man. Him and Polamalu, I mean, it's crazy.
Polamalu getting the call from the bullpen there to get in the head of shoulders.
Bring.
In the time machine.
Bring. We got anybody on Tampa?
I don't know. I saw Tom Brady campaigning for Richard Seymour to make the Hall of Fame. That's the dog connection right now that I know of. I'll have to do some research, Shock.
Gotcha.
We got Brett Green on their video staff. Brett Green and Mike Dewsnap on their game entertainment staff. Greg Mays. Mike. They used to work for us.
Yeah. Come on, Dewsnap.
Nada, I know, is on the roster for the Packers.
Oh, really? Was he on practice squad or he's on a regular roster?
I don't know. Mike, Georgia made a graphic the other day, and it was Rams versus Packers.
My department, man. that is football social. I do not oversee that.
I know you're not in charge of it, but I just wanted to let you know you are closer to this production than Shock and I are. So if someone got it wrong, it's on you.
Sure. Sure, I will take it.
Leonard Floyd ain't mad, man. He got that sack at the end of the year. Got that extra 1.5. He ain't mad.
Incentives, no, give me 1.5.
I wouldn't want to make Leonard Floyd mad.
Incentives, man.
Shock, before we wrap up here and go to our break, with landing for Georgia, I think the narrative is obviously, you know, people expect being the head coach that it's all his defense, but you've been up close to this team. Can you set that record straight for us?
So the thing with Coach Lanning, and obviously everybody knows Kirby's a defensive-minded guy. He's going to keep his pulse on that defense because, hey, he's a defensive coordinator at heart. He's been there. He's done that. But talking with Coach Lanning, it's fun to talk to him because you can tell that when you talk to his players and when you talk to him, that defense is his. Now, Kirby, of course, will have his say-so in there, but that defense is on him. And the way he gets those guys playing at the level that they played at, and the guys love it. And the excitement that he has when we talk to him on, like, our little coaches' meetings and he's going through the plan, he's talking about each player, like, No doubt about it. Now, he's just not a guy who has the title. This guy has a lot to do with what they do on the defense side of the ball, along with all the other defensive coaches. But it's absolutely his defense. And, of course, Kirby's got a hand in it, but it is his.
Yeah. I mean, Kirby is going to have control of the unit and have his eyes on it. But it's always an overrated narrative to think that the defensive coordinator for Georgia is just standing on the sideline holding a clipboard. That ain't it. But
we'll wrap up. Great time there, Wes.
Yep. Wrap up the first half of Shock and Ship. And Andy Landers joining us after the break. We'll be right back. Welcome back into Shock and Ship. Andy Landers joining us, legendary women's head basketball coach at the University of Georgia for quite a while now on the SEC Network. And he's in his overalls right now. He's been working out on the farm. So we got a lot to talk about. Coach, how you doing?
Doing great, guys. Hope you guys are.
We're doing well. So when you work out on the farm, I know there's been a ton of features done about your life out there and what you're doing, but what are your main focuses just on a day-to-day basis between, I mean, you're balancing this and a broadcasting career?
Yeah, I tell you, there's some interesting things come up, and I'm going to tell you a little story here in a second if you want to hear it about what happened last week, as a matter of fact. But, you know, what do I do out there? I have 35 mama cows. Right now I have 35 calves. Mm. And since I retired, I've always had cattle, but since I retired, I went with registered cattle. And What I'm trying to do is just create some better cattle. Last spring was a home run. I do a lot of artificial breeding, and had an unbelievably good calf crop last year. Probably sold 15 bulls for breeding purposes.
Wow,
so, you know, it was really, really good, and number of outstanding females in that crop too. Just got hooked up with the right two bulls and everything went well. But that, you know, I raise the hay. I do all that myself. I cut, rake, bale hay. But this time of year is the time of year when during the winter when I have to do stuff. You know, I have to feed hay every day, or when I'm gone, I put out enough to last them until I can get back. Once winter's over and the grass starts to grow again, then, you know, I'm just out there piddling more than anything else, just doing whatever I want to do.
So, Coach, right now, the language you're speaking to me is Spanish.
Yeah.
I am a city boy, so I have never had to do anything with cows. I've never had to. My first question is, I'm going all the way back to when you first started the story. What is, you said the mama cows or mama calves compared to the registered? What's the difference? I have no idea.
Well, you know, with before I just had what in the business is called commercial cattle. I had some crossbred cows, really, really good crossbred cows. They were half Angus and half Hereford. That's two different breeds of cattle.
Shot. Angus, that's good. I know that because I heard a good Angus.
That on a menu somewhere.
That's what I heard. I heard of that.
The registered cattle, kind of think about it, you probably could relate to it best with pets. You know, there's German Shepherd dogs and then there's mixed breed dogs.
Okay. So
registered cattle, all purebred, Angus, they have pedigrees. And it's really fascinating. In fact, I'm gonna challenge you to do this and you'll get a big kick out of it. I want you to go to SAV Angus.
Okay.
I want you to Google SAV Angus record selling bull. And you'll see that this is not my world. Although right now at my farm, I have a bull from Schaff Angus up in North Dakota.
Coach, that price tag.
Oh, he just looked it up.
Oh, you got it. You got it. You got it.
Mike, talk to us, Mike. What is it?
You got to watch the auction. You got to watch the auction.
Another world record has been set by Chef Angus Valley with a bull produced on the ranch named America, selling for a record-setting $1.5 million.
What? I'm in the wrong freaking business. What?
That's a lot of beef, man.
$1.5 million?
Holy cow.
Now, oh, no.
And the story on that one goes like this. They had more than $1 million worth of semen sold on that.
Everybody looking for that, huh? Everybody looking for that.
The auction ever started.
Holy cow.
So that ain't got nothing on. Oh, man, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's, I'm trying to tap into those kinds of bloodlines, but the only way a guy like me can do that is to artificially breed. So if I can get semen from that bull, you can imagine the type of calf I ought to have.
I just love the fact you talk about it like so easily. And just, that's well, just what we do. I'm just going to go over here and get some of this good semen over here. And, you know,
I got to tell you, this is uncharted territory.
This is gone to places I did not expect.
But this is why I'm trying to get this semen over here. That's
this is why we bring Coach on the show.
No. Hey, guys, here's what happens at my place. then we'll get off of farming. So I come from ESPN. I was up there last weekend. Not this weekend, but this weekend before I get back in, I usually take the 6 o'clock flight out of there. I'm in my driveway by 10:30 and out at the farm by 12. So I go out there to feed and I take some hay out in the field. Of course, you know, they're like kids in a candy store. When you take a hay bale out there, they all come running around sniffing and want to mess with it. And so I did all that and I was headed back and I'm on the tractor and I'm headed back and I look over and there's this cow laying under a tree. And I said, that ain't good.
No,
that ain't good, you know, because she didn't come to the candy, you know. Yeah. So I drive over toward her. And as soon as I got over close enough, about 25 yards away, I thought, oh, man, this 1,300 pound cow somehow. And cows are smart, believe it or not, but somehow had gotten wedged between five different trees.
What?
She's laying there, and I'm confident she had been there for 24 hours at least.
Oh, man.
And she can't move.
Oh, wow.
Now, if you can imagine laying in the same position for 24 hours and your arms and legs being asleep and all that because you're all crunched up, the circulation's bad, that's where she was at.
Dang.
And she can't move. So I've got to go to the barn, get the chainsaw, get out, get some 2x6 blocks. I literally had to drive some 2x6 blocks about 8 inches long between her and the tree so that when I sawed the trees down, I didn't cut her up.
Well, yeah.
Oh.
And I have to cut 4 trees down. Then I take a pipe and dig a trench and under her because she can't move. And put a strap in under her front legs, wrap it around the forks of the tractor, lift her up, throw another strap in front of her back legs, lay her back down, hook it to the forks, pick her up, and back her out of there. And I didn't know.
Is this all solo?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah. Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. And so I get her out of there. I don't know if she'll ever be able to walk or not. I mean,
Oh my gosh.
Literally when I lifted her up and backed her out, I thought I'm going to have to lay her back down and just see what happens. But when I lowered the lift, she was standing there, back leg was trembling. And she barely could walk. But the good news is I got her up the next day and everything's good with her. But you just every now and then you just run into something like that. So that's what I do in my retired
free time. So regular sounds like your winters are a lot different from what they used to be. Just to Coach,
I'm just tell you, my days consist of my wife said, hey, we got a light outside the house that needs to be replaced. Can you go do that? And I spent time in the dirt and I was like, I'm getting dirt and down and dirty out here.
Yeah.
I sound like nothing compared to what you just did. Yeah.
That sounds Doc's so. All of a sudden, sitting at the desk at ESPN and having your meals catered in and talking about ladies' hoops, that seems slightly easier than working on the farm.
What? Do you think that you have the like most interesting, like off camera life compared to the other people you're working with in the studio? It's got to be.
I don't know what they're doing. But you know, and sometimes I don't even bring it up. What I, you know, when I walk in, they say, "What have you been doing? What'd you do while you was off?" I don't, and nothing. I just hanging out.
I remember one time we came out there and we brought a couple of the players out there, and they were kind of laughing and kind of petting the calves and just, oh, they're so cute. They're so cute. And then you looked at me and you kind of said under your breath, it was like, I hope she doesn't get too real attached to that one.
She's going to be done.
She's going in the deep freeze.
Daria and PB ain't doing none of that you doing. I know that.
Oh, man. You guys seem to have a lot of fun doing the studio show. And, you know, I'll see every once in a while, you know, in different seasons, as you know, it's been weird with the pandemic, but like you and Maria's trying to help you on social media and just the way they you guys seem to have a real good chemistry up there.
Yeah, it has been fun. And, you know, it's been interesting because When I first started, and I don't know how you guys have found it, if you've ever worked and done anything with ESPN, but you know, communication is different. You know, they like here's the best story I got. So I get a call, we want you to do this. I said, oh, you know, I don't really think I'd be good at it. They said, why you say that? I said, because it takes me about half an hour to say hello and y'all talking a little. little sound bites, you know? And they said, no, we think you'd be all right. I said, all right. I said, I'll do it. I said, on one condition. I said, if I'm bad, you got to get me out of there quick because you look bad and I don't want to make me look bad. All right, fine. We hang up the phone. Don't hear anything for like 2 months. Not a word, not a peep. I don't know. All of a sudden, DJ shaking his head. Yeah.
Oh.
So all of a sudden, an email comes in and says, be in Charlotte. No, be in Charlotte on Wednesday. This might have been on Monday. Be in Charlotte on Wednesday. You know, we're going to have an officials meeting, going to do this, boom, boom, boom. And the next day is media day for the women's coaches, you know, and you can hang out and just mix around, talk with them, da-da-da-da. I said, okay, yeah, you know, boom. So I didn't even know what to take. So I just threw all kinds of clothes in the car, went up there, you know, officials meeting, fine. Next day, go over, just hanging out with coaches, you know, just shooting the bull. And about 5 o'clock, my boss looks at me and says, shouldn't you get dressed? I said, well, dressed? She said, yes. She said, you're on at 6. I said, oh my gosh. She said, you're on at 6. I said, well, I better get the hotel and put something on. So I run over and put a suit on. This was my introduction. Now I'm sitting at the desk, Nell Fortner sitting beside me, Maria's over there, producer's in my ear, you know, and he's going five, four. Nell looks at me and goes, do you know which camera's yours? I said, what? Zero. We're on TV. There it is. I mean, that's the way it's gone. But one of the things they said to me, to your point, they said, we want you to bring fun to this. I said, okay. You know, if I can't have fun with it, I'm not going to do it anyway. And then, you know, after a year, they said, hey, we'd like for you to go to Bristol. And do the games up there. And I said, you sure? And they said, yeah. I said, well, anything special? They said, make it fun. So, you know, they're asking me to do something that, as you guys know, it comes pretty easy for me. I mean, so yeah, we have a lot of fun. We dish out to each other, and everybody takes it like a sport, and it's been really enjoyable from that standpoint.
I mean, I guess it's a little different for you kind of walking into this career in your retirement when a lot of other people are like trying to do anything they can to be in this industry, it's probably a lot easier to have fun,
you know,
in those circumstances.
Yeah. And sometimes I feel guilty about that. A lot of times I feel guilty about that. And I even ask myself how long I want to do something like this, because I know there's people out there that want to do it. It's not that I don't want to do it. I just, you know, if there's a young person out there that could be good at this, I'd love for them to take my place and do it. Because,
but you know what? But you know,
that's your
what
role.
I'd say is, not your role. Your role is because of your experience.
Exactly.
Your role is because of your experience. It's because of what you've done in this business, and it's because of who you are and your personality. Now,
no doubt.
Young person, they'll have their career. They'll get their shot. You need to enjoy. I mean, I'm not saying you're not enjoying it, but you need to enjoy it for what it is, because this is kind of a reward for all the hard work that you've put in over your career. And to get you on TV and people watch you having fun, it's contagious. I think it's great. You should. Mm-hmm. I'd ride that horse till it bucks you, man.
That's awful nice of you. But since you guys are in effect trying to talk me into it, if I do have a problem out the farm, I need all your phone numbers. And y'all can go out there and cut the trees down and fish the cows.
Coach, I went to private school. I'm not going to be much help.
Just pay me in brisket, Coach, and I'm good.
Coach, let me ask you this:
we can do that.
How does you coaching compare to what you do now? Because I tell people all the time, like, I had the nervous energy when I played. I couldn't wait for a game. I was excited, and then now, when that red light comes on, it's go time. You know, you got millions of people watching, and I still get that kind of same nervous energy. How is it for you as when you're about to coach compared to where you are now when, hey, you got millions of people watching?
You know, it's a good question. With coaching, once that game started, it was like playing DJ. Once that game started, everything's off the table except what you're doing.
Right.
And with this, you're not on the air all the time with what I do in studio. So you've got those down times where you can collect thoughts and think about things in a different way. It's not like there's a machine gun pointed at you.
Yeah.
Like it is when a game is going on. I mean, you got to make decisions on the fly and change and adjust and adapt. So it's a little bit, it's different in that regard. I think the thing that I try to do with this is bring as much as I can a coach's perspective to the show, to the analysis. Mm-hmm. What coaches think, and from having been around players, obviously, as a coach for 40 years, the effects of whatever's happening on a player. So it's different. I'm not making decisions that's going to determine the outcome of the game. I'm trying to share why the game is going maybe the way it's going, probably the same way you do.
Coach, obviously, you know, the current head coach of the women's program right now, having Joni Taylor on your staff for a number of years. And I think, you know, it's easy to assume when someone comes from a coaching tree and they take the same job, same program, that they're going to keep that torch going. But what are some ways that you see Joni doing things that only she could do them the way that she's doing them right now?
You know, Joni is first and foremost, I think, a people person. She was such a great fit for me and our staff and our team when she came, because, you know, I've said it so many times. I have no idea how many times I've made this statement, but, you know, one of the things I would say to every recruit when we went in their home, there may or may not be a better basketball program in the country than the University of Georgia. I don't know. But there's not a better people program than the University of Georgia. The people were always the most important thing to us on a day-to-day basis, how we recruited, who we recruited. It was all about getting the right kind of people. I would rather have a little less talent and the right people as more talent and a couple of knuckleheads, because you're going to go further and you're going to enjoy the journey so much more. And Joni was the right people. She fit so well when she came. And to see that, that's who she is. That's what she's doing at Georgia. She places a premium on people, how people comport themselves, not just on the court, but off the court. And in the long haul, that's going to pay such great dividends for her, and it is now.
They get a big win. Get a big win this past week up on Rocky Top, and you know how hard it is to win up there. That's a huge W.
Yeah, they've got a heck of a basketball team right now. You know, they're not, as most teams in the country, they're not any teams in the country that don't have some things that they need to work on. But they're the best defensive team in the Southeastern Conference. There is no question about that. I put them head and shoulders really above anybody. I think she does an excellent job there, not just with teaching the components, the fundamentals of defensive play, but she also does an excellent job of game prep and scouting and coming up with the defensive game plan. They're going to be in every game that they play because of that. And they're deep right now. They've got a lot of depth. It's really a pretty good mix. You know, she's calling them a veteran basketball team, which they are. I understand why people and why she refers to them that way, but they also have some young players that are coming along and making major contributions that make not just this year look good, but the future look good as well.
Coach, where has this game changed? I mean, go back to you being hired at 26, being Dooley's first hire to the University of Georgia, and then now to where the game is in 2021. Where has the women's game, changed so much from then to now?
It's light years. It's unbelievable. You know, there's little things that happen all the time, shock, that I just kind of chuckle. You know, because of the pandemic, Arkansas is flying in on game day and playing on game day.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or people are busing on game day to play on game day. That's what we did. You know, you go back 40 years, that's what we did. You know, except we weren't flying in, we were busing in. You know, people, I don't know how you do that. I don't know. Well, we did it for years because that's where the sport was. That's where the money and the budgeting was. You know, you had to do those kinds of things. But, you know, the greatest example I can give you, I think, that give you an idea where the game has gone. In 83, we played in our first Final Four. We played in five Final Fours. And in 83, we played in our first up in Norfolk, Virginia. And I'll never forget this. So we had the meet the media time up there with the four coaches who were coaching in the Final Fours: Southern Cal, Louisiana Tech, is Vivian Stringer at Cheney State, Georgia. And they took the four coaches into the room. I mean, literally, this is the way it happened. We walk into this room that I'm going to say it was a large room, but it wasn't like a ballroom or anything. It was probably 40 feet by 40 feet. It was this big square room. And they said, all right, one of you, and that's the way they said it, one of you go over to that corner, one of you go over to that corner, one of you go over to that corner, one of you go to that corner, and when the media comes in, they can just come around and talk to you.
Oh, wow.
You know, and there's five or six, there's five or six newspapers there.
Oh,
and, wow. And they came in and they talked to us, and 20 minutes later, we were gone. Well, you know, we go back in 85, it's changed a little bit. We go back in 95, 96, and 99. And by 99, it was ridiculous the time that we spent with media. You had press conference. You had another press conference. You had press conference before practice. Then you had a press conference after practice. And you had, you know, television cameras everywhere and all these people from everywhere all over the country in there trying to get questions in. And, you know.
But you sound like you miss it. You sound like you miss it.
Yeah.
So you go.
Sounds like he misses 83.
You know, how do you go from, hey, go stand in that corner. If somebody wants to talk to you, they'll come over and ask you a question. to literally being ushered down the hallway by people almost like security to get you into the media room so you can do this media thing. And it was constant. I mean, it was a distraction to what you're trying to do. So it's changed. Every facet of it has changed, just like I was talking about. You know, when I got to Georgia, we used 15 passenger vans to go to games.
No way.
Two 15 passenger vans. That's how we got to Knoxville, Tennessee, to play the University of Tennessee. When I left, we were on a charter plane that if you buckled your seatbelt slow 20 minutes later, you're landing before you can get your seatbelt buckled. Just keep your hands on the buckle, buckle it, unbuckle it at the same time.
And you're down. Oh, yeah. Man.
And you know, Therese Edwards and those guys in the 80s, you know where we ate pregame? Well, I mean, remember, this is a people place, and it was, you know, where you guys want to eat? McDonald's.
That's what it was? That was the pregame?
Yeah. And then you go from that to now you're having meals catered in your hotel so you don't have to leave your hotel. Hell, we used to like to leave the hotel. We used to like going to McDonald's and Wendy's. You know, I mean, every piece of it has changed. You know, the Nike gear, you know, we were blessed. I was the first women's basketball coach to sign a contract with Nike. And that only happened because of my good friend, Hugh Durham, who was the men's coach. He was one of the original 15, 16 people, men's coaches that signed with Nike back before Nike was cool. Nobody knew what Nike was. So we were always treated well by Nike, and they still are. But, you know, the gear, you know, you went from getting, from when I started, I think it was two dozen pair of shoes was our deal, to uniforms, warm-ups. How many warm-ups do you need? All five or six for everybody would be fine, to 120 pair of shoes. And everything changed. I mean,
I still try to go back and get the gear they got now.
I know you do. Yeah. All former players do. You know, you let one of those former players walk in the office, they're doing like, they're going like this, shot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where's the equipment room?
Coach, oh, yeah. What size is that?
I need to do it.
I don't care. I you know, and I can remember a lot of them. Like, you wear 8.5. I can wear 9. I can wear 9.5.
I can make that fit. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, Coach, I know the game came a long way because I went to high school, as Mike will tell you, at Collins Hill, and he's sick of hearing me talk about that. But I graduated a year behind Maya Moore, and the buzz when you came to visit, when Pat came to visit, and Gino, I don't remember a single time a college football coach came to visit, but I remember the buzz when Maya was getting recruited. And that is, that's probably something that when you were first starting out, I don't know if a high school may have felt that way.
Oh, let me tell you, and guys, I can't make this up. And I'm just going to say it. Whether I think it's true, I think I swear to you, I think it's true. I may have been the first person to recruit nationwide in women's wow. basketball. Okay. And you know, here's your story. I get to Georgia. I get the job at Georgia. I sit down. My first call. Charles Cooper, Lowndes County High School. They'd won 137 straight games.
Oh,
they'd won 130. They got players galore. Okay. I said, Charles, this is Andy Landers, University of Georgia. I said, Charles, you there? He said, yeah. He said, nobody's ever called here from University of Georgia.
Oh, wow.
I'll never forget. That's exactly what he said.
Oh, wow.
So I hang up the phone after we talked, and I'm thinking, you know, this is bad. Georgia's got really good players everywhere, and nobody's aware of them.
Yeah.
So in the fall, I got in my car, and I went up above Rome, and my objective was I'm going to see how many high schools I can go in and out of in a day, and I'm going to spend the week doing this. I was going in 5, 6, 7, 8 high schools, go in, introduce myself, hey, Andy Landers, University of Georgia, ever have a player, ever see a player you think can ever help University of Georgia, yell at me if I ever do anything for you, give me a yell, boom, I'm in the car and I'm going to next school. Bam, 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 all right? I go down to Moultrie, go across the state through Valdosta, up through Savannah, came back up through Augusta, get back home the next Monday, okay? I'm going 5 straight days. I did this Monday through Friday. Then on Monday, I walk into the Coliseum. True story, guys. Get this. Now, stop. Let me tell you this. When I take the job at Georgia, Mercer and Valdosta are both ranked in the top 20.
Wow.
Okay? Mm. They're really, really good. Georgia is awful. Awful. The year before I get here, the players boycotted games. The coach boycotted a game.
No.
And the trainer boycotted another game.
Detroit.
Yeah. I ain't taking no angles today. Hey, stop. I cut them all. Oh. I made everybody try out, and I cut all those players. I'm going, you know, I'm not real smart, but if they got the last coach fired, they get me fired too.
Right.
So I'm going to cut them, right? So I cut them. So I walk back in that Monday. I've been all over the state, and I walk back in that Monday, and my AD walks up to me, my women's AD, Liz Murphy. She walks up to me, and she says, we got a problem. I said, what's the problem? She said, Lyndall Worth called. Well, Lyndall Worth was like God. She was the coach at Valdosta State. You know, I mean, they were walking the dog in this state. Now, she says, Lyndall Worth called. I said, well, where's the problem? She said that you were cheating. I said, she did. She said, yeah. I said, well, what did she say I had done? She said that you'd been in some high schools talking to coaches. I said, Liz, true story, word for word. I said, Liz, that's not called cheating.
Yeah.
It's called recruiting.
Right.
She looks at me. She looks at me and she goes, really?
Oh, no.
I said, yes. She said, you can do that? I said, yes.
What?
Here's what was going on.
Oh.
Mercer and Valdosta, if they had 3 scholarships open, they'd send a letter out to all the high schools, really all the high schools around them, not even all over the state. We're having tryouts on Saturday. We got 3 scholarships to give. You know, boom, boom. We'll let you know by 12 o'clock on Saturday whether you got one. They'd come in, they'd have a workout for a couple of hours. They'd post on a door, these three people get scholarships, and that was it.
Wow.
That was it. That's what they were doing.
That is wild.
So this recruiting thing was nuts. So I'm going, you know, I can get players. So my first year, we signed player year in Georgia, player year in Tennessee, player year in Mississippi. I mean, we just went out. Third year, we signed a national player year out of Chicago. But here's another story to tell you. In the early 80s, Texas was UConn. Mm. UConn, Geno hadn't gotten there.
Yeah.
Texas was UConn. Texas led the Big Eight in attendance, both men's and women's. Their women's team led the Big Eight in attendance.
Wow.
Okay. They were really good. And then you got Pat up in Tennessee, and I'm down here in Georgia, and I'm everywhere. I'm in Michigan. I'm in Chicago. I'm recruiting kids.
You're cheating.
Yeah, I was cheating.
Cheating.
So number one player in the country, Tanya at number one guard in the country, excuse me, number one guard in the country, Tanya Edwards, Flint, Michigan. I go in home visit. And they weren't, not very many people were making home visits. I go in a home visit. I say, Tanya, I know Tennessee's coming in tomorrow night. I said, who else you got? She said, Texas. Now, late September. She said, Texas. I said, when they coming? Texas, number one team in the country. This is number one guard in the country. What do you think she says? I don't know. They hadn't called me yet.
Oh.
That's where it was.
Because they didn't have to.
Right.
They didn't. They never did. They were on her list. But they didn't even recruit her. That's just where the women's game was.
Dang.
You know, so, and over time, obviously things have changed now. But, you know, heck, man, I was going in Pennsylvania getting the best player, Illinois getting the best player. I mean, shoot, it was nuts.
Coach, the first 6 years before you got there, 37-85. So I see why they were boycotting games, because they weren't playing well at all. To that notion, I got.
Hey, Jock, you get a kick out of this. That team that I told you I inherited.
Yeah.
My women's AD says we got as much talent as Tennessee. I said, I got to cut these guys.
that talent, they got to go.
Oh, if they got you believing this,
they got you all the way messed up.
Oh, my junior college—I kid you not—my junior college team. Now, when I coached junior college for 4 years, we played 34 games. See, this is how much games change. We played 34 games in 4 years against 4 year schools.
Mm.
Okay. We won 33. The only reason we didn't win 34 was guy had his big kid bait my big kid because he knew my big kid had a temper and she co-hopped her.
Just straight swung on him.
And got kicked out of game.
Oh, man. Oh. Coach, one more question I got for you. Are you a fan of candy corn at all?
Candy corn?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Coach, you're not. You like candy corn?
The little yellow and red,
yeah,
white candy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. We got
one win from, because every week, going back since like Halloween, I've said candy corn is like the worst candy ever. And we have tons of people on the podcast, and everybody's been like, absolutely not. So they finally get a win. You gave them a win.
Hey, the Hall of Famer likes candy corn. That's all I got.
Hey, there you go. Candy corn. You know, all it is corn syrup and sugar, but it's good.
All right, win for you guys. Win for you guys. Oh, man.
Is Wes frozen? I think Wes is frozen.
Like we froze Wes.
Wes is frozen.
All right, Wes is out
just,
of here.
We can just leave him like that.
Oh, man. Coach, well, we appreciate the time. We're going to let you get out of here. Of course, I feel like we're going to talk to you for another hour. I mean, I would love to hear all these stories. So we appreciate you taking the time to join us here on Shock and Ship. And all the best. We got to have you back on because we need more stories.
Yeah, we'll definitely get you back on.
It's my pleasure. I got some stuff now.
Oh, we need them.
It's amazing. It's amazing the changes and how things have, what things have become. And I'm just thankful that I was able to enjoy about 36 years of it. So I appreciate you, Shock. Awesome. Appreciate you guys for having me on. Wes, when you wake up, have a good
when you wake up. Perfect way to end Shock and Ship. Coach telling Wes he needs to wake up on the podcast. We appreciate everybody joining us on Shock and Ship from my man. Look at Coach. We love Coach. Got his overalls on and everything. We'll see you next time on Shock and Ship.
All right, partner.
Later.